you know, in pregnancy, that the belly is revered and people are posting images every day and comparing it to the sizes of fruits and vegetables, we're so proud of it. And as soon as we've given birth, it becomes a place of shame and we have to hide it away and we have to look not pregnant as fast as possible. Correct. And I believe that's contributing again to the breakdown of the body. It's like, we need to rest, we need to recover and rehab. It really truly requires rehab. Like any other part of the body that became injured, we would go through a rehab, and it is simply overlooked with pregnancy and birth.
Welcome to Better with Dr. Stephanie. I am your host, Dr. Stephanie Estima. This show is for women just like you with a deep desire for learning, self-actualization, and becoming more of who you already are. Every week, we are going to deconstruct how to build better bodies, better minds, better relationships, better sex, and better families. I'll be giving you access to world-class thought leaders to help give you the tools to answer this question. What are the simplest things that you can do today to get better tomorrow? I am part geek, part magic, and want to share the juiciest questions, topics, and often taboo conversations that I think I've always wanted to be a part of and I wanted to be having. So let's get better together. Hey, Betties, welcome back to another episode of Better with Dr. Stephanie. It's me, your host, Stephanie Estima. Today, we are talking all about the pelvic floor. Both men and women have a pelvic floor. And today's episode, we are focusing a lot on the changes of a pelvic floor through the arc of a woman's life. And we are talking to the vagina coach herself, Kim Vopny. And that's actually her handle on social media is The Vagina Coach. And she thinks that everybody should have a coach for their vagina. She holds a BA in psychology and a postgrad diploma in health and fitness. She's a restorative exercise specialist, certified personal trainer, and a certified pre-postnatal fitness consultant, certified fitness for fertility specialist, and a Pilates instructor, and a hypopressive method trainer. So very qualified to speak about the pelvic floor. And in this episode, we talk about some of the changes, the functions of the pelvic floor, where it starts, where it ends, and we talk about some of the changes that a woman can experience through the arc of her life. So specifically, we talk about pregnancy and childbirth and some of the changes that can happen. We talk about this obsession, this bounce back body obsession, especially around pregnancy, which is a bit of a pet peeve of mine that I think really needs to change. Like, you've just created a human. Like, let's not think about the weight loss just yet. We also get into Kegels, lots of controversy around Kegels. Should you do them? Should you do them? And should you not do them during pregnancy? And we talk about their origin, how they're used, and we talk about the different types of pelvic floor. So whether you have a pelvic floor that may be hypertonic or hypotonic, we talk about the different applications of exercises there, which of course we get into hypopressives as well, which is one of the exercises that when I was practicing in clinic was one of my favorites for my patients, whether they were pregnant or I suspected that they had back issues, glute issues, even knee tracking issues. We'd give them some hypopressive exercises, which is basically a low pressure exercise to help restore the integrity of the pelvic floor. Now, this is a conversation that I think every woman, irrespective of her age, should be listening to, because this is something that's not really discussed freely in the open forum that is our culture. It's often, you know, we give birth and we sort of keep some of these changes to ourselves. We're not sure if they're normal, etc. And I think that this is going to be a really eye-opening conversation for you. This was recorded live inside my Hello Betty membership, my HBHQ, as I affectionately call it. So what we did was we recorded this and then we had a question and answer afterwards. So, and without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the vagina coach, Kim Vopny. One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Boncharge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Boncharge neck and chest mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers, and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure. And that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to boncharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com. I am so happy to be able to welcome one of my own to the podcast today. This is Kim Vopny. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here and chat with you.
Yeah. And we are right now, we are recording this live inside the Hello Betty membership, which for those of you that are not familiar with it, it is my female centric membership on all things nutrition and fitness. We talk about vaginas. We talk about hormones. We talk about sex. We talk about all the juicy conversations that you maybe wish you had when you were earlier, younger with friends, but never had the opportunity to. And when I saw that Kim was one of our Betties in our membership, I really wanted to highlight you because you are not only a Betty, but you are, of course, a pelvic floor specialist. And this is a big topic inside Hello Betty. I did a training on this last month, and there was a lot of interest. And so I'm really excited to be discussing all things pelvic floor with you today.
Well, I'm excited that you're chatting about it too, because of course I'm biased, but I love the pelvic floor, and I will welcome anybody who will allow me to share some information and help spread the word, because it really is it still is a bit of a taboo topic, and not a lot of people are yet aware of all they need to know. So I really am thankful for you highlighting it.
Yeah. And it's a topic that sort of reminds me of menstrual cycles. So as you may or may not know, I wrote a book on, you know, living in alignment with our cycles. And it almost seemed a bit taboo to talk about bleed week and, you know, your bleed. Yes, we bleed for 5 days out of the month. And I feel like there's a similar through line there with pelvic floor, the discussion around pelvic floor. And even when I would refer, when I was back in physical practice, I would refer patients to PT, physical therapists all the time who had specialized training, like pelvic floor physiotherapists. And they would be like, you know what? It was just weird. Like, I just felt like I was getting like, you know, they didn't like the experience. And I think that there seems to be this, I don't want to say subculture or counterculture, but almost this uprising from women saying, you know what? we're not little men. We have different needs. We go through things like childbirth. We bleed every month for, you know, a certain amount of years. And I'm sick and tired of being ashamed of it. And I'm sick and tired of feeling guilty and like there's something wrong with me. And like, I need to know more about, you know, my yoni, as some people refer to, or my, you know, my nether regions, whatever it is. So yeah, I'm glad you're here too. So let's, before we, and I want to ask you about your history. I want to ask you about, you know, how you became, because you're known online as the Vagina Coach, which is just the best name ever. You know, your handle on Instagram, the Vagina Coach, all these things. But before we get into that, just for, you know, for my ladies and, you know, the other humans who love them, let's just define what we're talking about, because even still today in 2021, the pelvic floor, like, it's like, what is that? Is that the area that you Kegel? Like, let's talk about, you know, what the pelvic floor is, where it is, and its function, its mechanical and, you know, physiological function.
Yeah. You're right. And there's all sorts of names, and I like to start out talking with the proper anatomical terms, and I encourage anybody who's a parent to use those with their kids. But at the same time, I appreciate that it's we want to have a little bit of fun, and it can sometimes be a difficult topic to talk about. And if we add in a little bit of slang words here and there, it can sometimes increase the comfort of some people talking about it. But so the pelvic floor is a group of muscles that close off the base of our pelvis. So within our pelvis, we have bones, and we have a bunch of nerves. We have lots of blood supply. We've got this group of muscles that attach from the pubic joint. So at the front, people call it pubic bone sometimes, but it is actually a joint at the front. And at the back, we have at the end of our spine, the very end, our little tail. People call it the tailbone. It's called the coccyx, if you want the fancy word. That's also an attachment point of the pelvic floor muscles. And then if we're sitting in a chair, and if we kind of put one hand under a butt cheek and we pull the flesh of our bum away, we should be able to kind of dig our fingers in and feel a little bit of a bony point under each butt cheek or within each butt cheek. And that would be the ischial tuberosities or sitz bones. And so those four points it's almost like a diamond shape. And those are where the pelvic floor muscles attach. And the important part is, as you mentioned, some people call it the Kegel muscle. And it's important to understand that it's not just one muscle, it is a group. There's three layers. And the first two layers are primarily responsible for closing openings. So within the female body, we've got our anus, we have our vagina, we have our urethra, and the pelvic floor plays a role in helping those open when they need to and keep them closed when we don't want things to be coming out. And then we have the third layer that's primarily responsible for organ support. So in the female body, we've got bladder, uterus, and rectum. And the pelvic floor muscles play a role in helping keep those organs supported and in their proper anatomical position. The pelvic floor also plays a role in our pelvic and spinal control and stability. So because of the attachment points on the spine and the pelvis, it plays a role in our core control mechanisms. And it plays a role in our sexual response. And it also has a bit of a sump pump action. So the pelvic floor actually moves in coordination with our breath and creates this sort of, as I said, sump pump to help move things, to help, you know, with digestion, circulation, getting toxins out. So it's these really, really important jobs that we're never told about. And if we knew the importance of this part of our body, I think it would open up conversations earlier. It would help decrease the shame. And it would also help prevent a lot of these challenges that people deal with. And a lot of them, they deal with in silence. They suffer with in silence because it's this taboo subject, and it's often associated with shame or trauma or embarrassment. And people sometimes are dismissed by healthcare providers, like, oh, it's just part of being a woman, or it's because you're reaching menopause, or it's because you've given birth. And even media tells us that light bladder leakage is just part of being a woman. So we're fed all these messages, and even through our families, maybe passed down through generations, that, well, that's just what happens. But thankfully, with social media and a whole bunch of, you know, pelvic health preachers like myself, the conversation is getting out there, and people are now recognizing that there is a lot that can be done. It's not something they need to accept as something they need to live with for the rest of their life. And they're starting to place value at this part of the body that is the foundation of our core and really is the source of our confidence and our power. And when it's optimized, we move better, we sleep better, we can enjoy sex more. You know, it just influences so many parts of our life.
Absolutely. And I have to say, you know, when I was, this would often come up in clinical practice where we would, when we were trying to get, you know, and it would never come up in the beginning, right? It would always, I would have a patient presenting with, you know, persistent low back pain or knee issues or thoracic dysfunction. And you would go through some of the, you know, things that you know, as you accrue over the course of time, you sort of accrue tools that you know are like, that are going to work and that are robust in terms of their efficacy. And there would be those patients that you do all the things and then, you know, it would still be happening. And it would only come up after you sort of develop a certain amount of rapport with the woman. And then she would end up saying, you know what, like, I can't, like, it was, I remember it was, there's one patient I'm thinking of in particular. And she's like, I can't go to the trampoline park anymore with my kids. Like that was, and I was like, why not? He's like, oh, because like I have to, I will have to bring a pad with me, or if I don't, like I'll pee, there'll be some leakage. And so then I was, you know, sort of became savvy to, you know, these people who didn't get better with just a low back intervention or just a glute intervention or just a thoracic expansion intervention or whatever it was that I was doing, that I would start asking them about these questions. And I'm like, you know, and then, you know, when you ask it, they're like, how did you know? Like, did something happen? You know, it's like, no, it's just, you know, just from clinical experience, like this is kind of what happens. And I think it's so important that we're talking about this because, you know, if you are a woman, as you said, if you're a woman who just accepts this as part of getting older, like I just need to wear a pad because I'm 50 or I'm 60 years old, like pardon my French, but fuck that. Like that is not an appropriate model for most women to adopt. Now there are extreme, we'll get into pelvic organ prolapse. And we'll talk about some of these more extreme cases where we have this dysfunction, where we have, you know, the viscera, you know, extrude, like coming out of the body, we'll get there. But for a woman, you should be able to run, you should be able to laugh or cough or sneeze, all of these things that increase, you know, intra-abdominal pressure without leaking.
Yeah. Okay. And just, I wanted to touch on something you said with regards to back pain. There's a researcher out of Milton, Ontario, Dr. Sinead Dufour, who did a study that was recently published. And she was looking at the correlation between low back pain and pelvic floor dysfunction. And in her study, and it was all women, 95.3, I believe was the number, percent of the women in that study who presented with low back pain also had some form of pelvic floor dysfunction, typically incontinence or prolapse. So the two are very closely tied, and so many people experience low back pain and they'll see a chiropractor or a massage therapist, or maybe acupuncture, maybe physio, but pelvic floor physio is not many people know about it. And that can often be, as you were talking about, that can be the missing link for so many people.
Yeah. Well said. All right. Let's talk a little bit. So one of the most common, you know, in a woman's history, if I was looking for any evidence of pelvic floor dysfunction, it was either, you know, one pregnancy or she was multiparous, meaning she had more than one. So pregnancy and childbirth. So let's talk a little bit about some of the mechanical changes that can happen. Some of the increased pressure, the shifting in weight, you know, the spine change, like let's talk about all of those things as it relates to the pelvic floor in pregnancy, and then what we can expect, postpartum after childbirth.
Yeah. So pregnancy and childbirth are definite known contributors to increasing our risk of experiencing pelvic floor dysfunction or challenges like incontinence and prolapse, chronic low back pain. And part of it is biomechanically. So our posture changes as a result. We have increased size, most people in their breasts. Sometimes we get more rounded in our shoulders, in our abdominal wall. We obviously, the belly starts to grow out in front of us. We have the 2 6-pack muscles in the abdominal wall. Those are our outermost abdominals. Those are joined, like held in place at the midline by a connective tissue called the linea alba. And that linea alba faces stretch as the belly grows. And sometimes the rectus will move away from the midline. So that can alter our core control mechanisms. Also the underlying abdominal muscles are also experiencing stretch and sort of displacement, I guess is a word we could use. our center of gravity shifts. So now the way that we start to hold that weight. So sometimes people, it's very common to see pregnant people that are waddling, and they often have their upper back is sort of leaning back and their pelvis is almost thrust forward. And they sort of do this little waddle. Sometimes it's because of discomfort and pain. And sometimes it's because that's the position that they have adopted to almost counteract this center of gravity, this growing belly that's out in front of them. And that can then result in altered breathing mechanics. It can create more discomfort in the low back. We even have research to say that pregnant women have more back pain than non-pregnant women. And I don't know if we necessarily needed a study to confirm that, but it's true. In another
way.
So, and then the muscles, the pelvic floor muscles, those alterations in how we're carrying our weight also alters the way that our pelvic floor muscles are functioning. And oftentimes they start to hold on to more tension. So part of it is because of the relationship between the diaphragm and the pelvic floor starts to shift a bit because of that change in our posture. Sometimes it's because maybe we're sitting more or sitting in different ways because we're trying to manage pain. But those are the most common. We also experience the hormonal fluctuations that can contribute to some discomfort, pregnancy aches and pains, most specifically in the pelvis and in the abdominal, in the low back. So pelvic girdle pain, pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain, especially in the pubic joint at the front, the tailbone, and also the SI joints in the pelvis. So SI joints here at the back, we have two of them. We can have tailbone pain down here, and we can also experience pubic joint pain at the front, partly because of the hormones, but then also we have an additional weight. So we are carrying this ever-increasing load as the baby grows, potentially babies, that's not only shifted our center of gravity, but the muscles need to carry that load as well. And if they're not in their ideal, optimal position, then other muscles will maybe start to overwork. So sometimes the posterior pelvic floor starts to come in a little bit more, but then also the glutes start to become a little bit inhibited. So you see in pregnancy, it's not as, visual, partly because we typically carry a little bit of excess weight. But once people have given birth and the weight starts to come off the body, if you look at the backsides, like the butts of new moms, they're often very flat and sort of tucked under. And part of that is because their body has adapted to that shifting center of gravity. And then once the baby is born, they don't just let go. The body has adapted to that new state. And there's often a lot of tension in that pelvic floor, which we want to address when we're pregnant, because that can hinder us during our birth. And we want to make sure that we address it afterwards, because that's a contributing factor to the lingering things like incontinence and prolapse.
Yeah. And that's such an important point that you bring up. I often find myself shouting from the rooftops the importance of butts, the importance of a Betty booty, because I call it the Betty booty, you know, it's like branding and whatever, it's fun. But really, you know, as a chiropractor, we've talked about this idea, you know, we call it, I think there's some overlap with physiotherapy as well, where we refer to this as lower cross syndrome. Or glute amnesia is how it sort of was originally referred to, where the glutes are, as you mentioned, inhibited. And then it's hard to actually reactivate that neuromuscular connection. Hence what you are, you know, when you observationally say, okay, like there's a flattening of the roundness of the glute maximus. And then the way that I had the pregnancy waddle too. Like I remember feeling my first son engaged, like when he had sort of descended, and like I couldn't bring my legs together if I tried. Like his head was like in the ring of my mouth. Like I could, I was doing the waddle too, right? Like we all go through this as women, but then we there's so much conflicting. First of all, we're never taught like what you just said, and the way that you just said it, we are not often explained that. So I would give lectures in the clinic. I had a big pregnancy population, a lot of new families where I was practicing. So we were talking about the mechanical changes in the spine and the center of gravity shifts forward. And then you get these, the kyphotic, like the accentuation of the kyphotic curve, the accentuation of the lordotic curve, the changes, as you mentioned, the sacroiliac joints as well. One of the things we'll get to childbirth in a minute, but I wanted to touch on, I want to talk a lot about Kegels, but specifically I want to talk about the controversy of Kegels during pregnancy. Yeah. So when I was becoming certified in, I was taking extra training in pediatrics and pregnancy. One of the things that we were taught, now this is, like I said, you know, I sometimes feel like I'm five centuries old. So when we were first learning, we were taught that, well, if you do Kegels while you're doing, while you're pregnant, you mentioned the attachments of the pelvic floor, one of them being the coccyx posteriorly. So if you are too aggressively doing Kegels while you're pregnant, you can now bring the coccyx, which is the tailbone, anteriorly, which can now interfere. Let's say you're on your back giving birth, then you can push the coccyx such that it starts to interfere with the baby's ability to pass through the birth canal. Now, I have thoughts on that, but before I serve up those thoughts, I would love for you to, first, do you agree with that? And I might've asked it a little bit, preemptively, because I think there's an important, when we talk about a Kegel, there's sort of two important parts to it, but do you agree with the premise that a pregnant woman should stay away from Kegels? If yes, why? If no, why not?
I don't agree. I believe that there is a place for Kegels. And my approach for anybody doing Kegels, regardless of whether they're pregnant or not, they need to be done correctly. They need to be done consistently and ideally coordinated with movement. In pregnancy, there's a shift where I may, depending on the person, have them reduce the number of actual contract and lifts versus how many kind of relaxations they may do. But there's benefit in taking the muscle through the full range of motion. There's, with any part of our body, our muscles like to go through their full excursion. And by limiting that, I don't think it serves the purpose fully or just focusing on the relaxation. I think there's benefit in doing both. But there's also a slight shift that I have people do around the time that they would start perineal massage, which is usually somewhere between 35 and 37 weeks of pregnancy. And that is the focus becomes, I guess, solely on relaxation, learning to surrender, and ideally done in conjunction with perineal massage, where we're introducing discomfort and stretch and pressure. So sensations that they will be experiencing while they're birthing, and learning how to yield, learning how to surrender, learning how to release tension, even if you're feeling some discomfort, because usually discomfort makes us withdraw and kind of tighten up. And their birth is not comfortable, and we have to learn how to surrender into that. So I believe that if we can train the pelvic floor in positions that mimic what we're going to be experiencing in labor and birth, and then I do believe in perineal massage and coordinating that with breath and relaxation, then we're training the pelvic floor to be responsive to the task at hand, to what we're going to be experiencing. So I believe that there is a place for Kegels in pregnancy.
Yeah. And I agree with you, because I think that when we think about, you know, these are, you know, when we think about the pelvic floor, these are skeletal muscles, right? So we need to be working the concentric and the eccentric, or, you know, in this case, as you meant, it's tension and release. And I think that what happens in, whenever we think about muscles, we often will think about the contraction. You know, we think about the contraction, the concentric versus the eccentric. And I remember learning, and this is, you know, this is not even just pelvic floor related. Like when you're in the gym, you know, and you're watching someone do like a bicep curl, the way that we even count, it's like, we count on the concentric. It's like one, two, you know. But if you look at, you know, even if you go to sort of Eastern Europe, and the way that they train, they count on the eccentric. So they'll come up and then they'll slow that eccentric down. And then that's count one.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a tendency in North American Western culture to really be thinking about tension more, add more weight, and then add more weight again. And we actually forget about the power of the eccentric. Yeah. And in this case, it's the letting go. It's the release. Yeah. It's the opening.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how we need that release to be able to generate power. And what's happened with the Kegel exercise is people have thought of it as just a squeeze. And so they're often squeezing, or, you know, squeezing and holding And sometimes they may be squeezing their pelvic floor, but sometimes they may be using their inner thighs, or they may be using their glute muscles thinking they're doing a pelvic floor exercise. And when the focus is solely on just squeezing and holding tension without relaxation, then I always equate it to like a bicep curl. So here's my arm extended out and pretend it was down at the side of my body, but that's the resting length of my arm. And from here, I have a full range of motion for my arm to move through. And if I was to walk around with it half bent all day long, maybe even carrying something on there, then when I was called upon to do more work, I would say, well, heck, I've been working all day. I'm kind of tired and I don't have much room left. So there's not really much power left here anyway. But if we learn how to relax and let go and come back down to that optimal resting length and train the pelvic floor to go through its full range of motion, then we have more capacity for power and we can respond to those increases in intra-abdominal pressure that we were talking about earlier. So, and the pelvic floor, as I mentioned, there's a closure. So the first two layers are responsible primarily for closing openings. And then the third layer is primarily responsible for organ support. And that's a lift. Levator ani is one of the groups of muscles, and that means lift the anus. And so we have to remember it's not just a squeeze. There's a drawing up and then there's the let go. So there's kind of three parts to a Kegel: contract, lift, and let go.
I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster. And of course, stress reduction. With the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna, it's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount. That is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better, and use code better at checkout. And I think there's so much confusion because, you know, the technocrats, you know, the technocratic, you know, totalitarianism that we live in, you could search up how to do a bicep curl. You could look and say, oh, I see that's how he's supinating the forearm now. Now he's pronating the forearm. And oh, there's all these different ways that you can do the bicep curl. But we, you know, you're going to talk to us a little bit about how to do a Kegel, but, you know, as much as, you know, I think we wouldn't be able to film you doing, like, we wouldn't be able to kind of get under and like take a look at what's going on, right? So we have to use our imagination because we don't necessarily have those visual cues that we can see on a YouTube or on an Instagram or on a whatever to be able to see what's going on. And I think that that's where, you know, I've often heard like, pretend like you're zipping up your trousers or pretend like you're, you know, like, it's kind of this like zip and lift or like you're holding in your urine, like that sort of visual cue. But for some people, when you're just using words and you can't demonstrate, yeah. You know, and that's what, you know, that maybe that's where the value of a pelvic floor physio comes in because they can actually coach you, like their fingers are there and it's like, okay, I need you to lift more here. I need you to put pressure there. I need you to relax it. You know, all of that yeah. as well.
And I think like, yes, to me, I'm always preaching pelvic health physio and I believe that is our gold standard. And if you have access to one, I view them kind of like the dentists of our pelvic floor. So we have been conditioned from a young age to brush our teeth twice a day, floss, go to the dentist once or twice a year. Even if we have no toothache, no symptoms of anything, we just go to have a checkup.
They're brilliant marketers, aren't they, those dentists?
We have the same press for our pelvic right. floor. We were taught at a young age that this is an incredibly important part of our body. This is how you do pelvic floor exercise. And then once you become sexually active, go see these amazing practitioners and they'll help keep it in check for your life. That would be transformative. And so the other piece to that is we're not everybody has access to a pelvic floor physio and we have our own biofeedback. We have our own fingers. We might even have a partner. And if we have a partner, they have fingers and it's a male partner, they have a penis and those can be biofeedback. So we can explore our own body and feel like when I do a Kegel, so I'll walk you through some cues, but can I feel like there's a gentle hug? Can I feel like there's a gentle drawing up and can I let that go? And you can ask your partner, can you feel when I do this? So yes, pelvic floor physio is what I always recommend as our gold standard, but we have access to tools. And if you're not comfortable with your fingers, there are biofeedback products even that can help you.
Oh, I see them now. They always are, advertising on Instagram. Like, I'm like, oh gosh, what do you guys, I always get it's like the ones where you squeeze and it sends a thing to your app about how much, like how many newtons of force or whatever. Yeah. They're very cool. All right. Let's talk a little bit about, actually, first, before we get there, what is a perineal massage? Just for the, like you mentioned it before, I'm familiar with it, but just for my Bettys who have never heard of what this is this something just localized in the context of pregnancy, or is this something that we can also use as a therapeutic intervention outside of pregnancy?
It's typically associated with birth preparation. So the main philosophy around perineal massage is to prevent tearing. So that's what it's promoted for. I view it as a way to introduce sensations of stretch, pressure, and discomfort. And that person who is either doing it on themselves or having somebody do it for them, then experiences those sensations and learns what they need to do in their body to relax and to release and to surrender. So some people say it's like stretching, pre-stretching the muscles. Yeah. Or the tissue maybe. But part of what can contribute to the increased chances of tearing are tension. And if we can learn how to release and relax those muscles, that's very powerful in terms of reducing the likelihood of tearing. So from a landmark perspective, the perineum is in between the anus and this is the vulva. So this is the perineal body here. And it's very common to experience tearing, usually off to the sides. There are some people who do experience some tearing upwards, but it's typically in through the perineal body. And it used to be common for doctors to perform what was called an episiotomy, where they would actually cut this tissue. And the intention was by cutting it, it would create more space and therefore make it easier for mom and babe. But what was happening was that was leading to more significant tearing and potentially tearing even into the anal sphincter, which was creating huge issues for people. So,
and not the way a woman might necessarily tear at all.
Exactly. Yeah. So natural tearing is definitely preferred over an episiotomy. Now, episiotomies may be performed in an emergency situation, but thankfully not done commonly or like routinely anymore. But it's very common. I mean, I think the statistic is over 80% of people have some degree of tearing, and first and second degree is fairly superficial. It's the third and fourth degree tears that we're trying to avoid. And those are the ones that can have more long lasting issues. So the point of perineal massage is really to help, again, introduce those sensations, learn how to surrender. And there are studies to support that people who participate in perineal massage may have a higher rate of intact perineum versus those that don't. But people who have torn potentially, or have maybe had a pelvic surgery where there was a repair to the perineum, or they had to cut the perineum in order to access to perform the surgery, that leaves scar tissue. And sometimes perineal massage can also be done to mobilize that scar tissue. And that can be done by yourself. And it can also be done by a pelvic floor physiotherapist.
Great. Okay. So let's imagine now that we've given birth and I will also say that my experience postpartum was different than probably most, because I was under the care of midwives. So my postpartum experience was, I almost want to call it like delightful, because I had, midwives kind of like, and shout out to the seventh generation midwives in Toronto. You guys are the best. You can save my ass, but they came to the house, came to the house and weighed the baby and did all the tests. And like, I am such a type. I had read all the books on breastfeeding, and when it came to doing it, I had no clue what I was doing. Help me breastfeed, all the things. But I understand that most people don't have that experience, and they might be under the care of an OBGYN. And the problem that I have with postpartum care with OBs is that, and I say this with love in my heart for all of my friends who are OBGYNs, who are just following standard practice, is that, they kind of book a 6 week, follow-up after the baby's born. And maybe there's an exam, maybe there's like a, how you doing? How's it going? And what's going, and then you're dismissed. And, if you think about the length of a pregnancy, it's about 40 weeks, give or take 2 weeks, or give or take, 2 weeks on either side, for most people. And 6 weeks postpartum you know, 6 weeks versus 40, that's 15%, right? So you see the patient, you know, after they've had one of the biggest events of their life, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, they're discharged, you know, and they're like, okay, you're good. Like, you know, see you in 2 years when you're pregnant again, or never, you know, yep. quarter to never. And I struggle with this as a standard of care, because I think that there's a lot of assumptions that can be left to the decision of the woman who may not necessarily know that she may have some pelvic floor dysfunction. And at 6 weeks, like, God, some women are still bleeding, you know, like you were still bleeding at that point. Right. So I'd love for you to comment on postpartum care, what your, you know, ideal might be, and what we need to be considering. Like, if you have, you know, if you are under the care of an OBGYN and they have said, hey, you're good, go back to everything. And then that, you know, that woman's like, great, I guess I can go back to my bootcamp classes now. And I guess I can go and lift heavy weights the way I was doing. And I guess I can, you know, run marathons the way I was doing. Like, what, talk to me about what your ideal standard of care might look like, and why, and how that contrasts with the 6 week post-op or postpartum.
Yeah. My ideals are to take inspiration from cultures around the world that embrace the philosophy of mother roasting or mother warming. And these practices honor the need for the birthing person, birthing women, to heal and to recover. And that what you do in those first 40 days postpartum will set you up for the next 40 years. And the belief is that the body has gone through a transformation. The body has opened to allow a babe, to allow conception. The muscles in the midline have moved away from the midline to create space as the babe grows. The muscles in the pelvic floor have stretched and expanded to allow for vaginal birth. Maybe there's been a cesarean birth, so there's been incisions into the abdominal wall. So there's been this opening. And that leaves, in Chinese medicine, they say it leaves the body prone to wind or cold. And so they introduce wrapping. So wrapping the pelvis and the abdominal wall, warm massages with oils, warm nourishing foods, bone broths, collagen rich foods. So there's a holistic view to healing the body. And in North America, many people are back at the gym at 2 weeks postpartum, and they're lifting weights. They're like, I feel fine. And while people may feel fine, we have to appreciate all of the adaptations that have happened over the period of 9 months, coupled with all that has happened, whether it's been a vaginal or a cesarean birth, and how that has altered the mechanics of our breath, the mechanics of our core control mechanisms, our ability to manage pressures. And that they're like, this is a very strong word and not everybody will agree with me, but even if you have no external tearing, you have an intact perineum, there is still an element of injury that happens to the body in birth. And with any other injury, we would acknowledge that, and we would rest, and we would go through a period of gradual progressive movement back to an activity. When it comes to postpartum,
we'd rehab it. Yeah,
we should be rehabbing. Yeah. We should be retraining, but we are given this elusive 6 week green light. We're sure some superficial tissue healing may have occurred, but we have some studies that looked at both cesarean and vaginal births. The majority of women have some degree of organ prolapse. So the displacement of the bladder, the uterus, and or the rectum at 6 weeks postpartum, the majority. And if anybody has experienced any form of incontinence while they're pregnant and have not addressed it, the chances of that lingering right after and even like for years beyond is very high as well. And if we took the time to rest and to recover and to retrain, so get that reconnection back between the brain and the pelvic floor, the diaphragm and the pelvic floor, and gradually rebuild that connection, rebuild the strength, stamina, endurance, suppleness of our core, and then gradually load it. And not by 6 weeks, like, you know, see a pelvic floor physio around 6 or 8 weeks. And then we start to gradually add more loaded exercise. But my opinion is holding off on the higher impact. So running, jumping, really heavy lifting for around 4 to 6 months postpartum. That doesn't mean we're not doing anything. That means we are doing very intentional core restoration work, gradually loading, getting back to a 4 to 6 week timeline, and then making sure that we have met prerequisite exercises that say, yes, you are ready to go back to running without putting yourself at risk for injury or long-term core challenges like organ prolapse or incontinence. So I disagree with the 6 week green light. I think that, you know, as you were mentioning, we have a 9 month period of adaptation. It's not unrealistic to think we have a 9 months on the other side of not an undoing, but as a rebuilding. And if we honored that, if we acknowledged that, I feel like the number of people who, I just had a person the other day who had a fantastic birth, no tearing, everything was lovely. I felt fantastic. And at 4 months postpartum, I was just moving a mattress with my husband and I felt a pop and she developed organ prolapse. She had done no core restoration training. She had done nothing like, and not to her fault. Nobody had explained that to her. She just simply didn't know. And I think there are so many people that say, why didn't somebody tell me? I wish someone had told me. I would have done things differently. And,
right.
And that just breaks my heart. It really breaks my heart.
And it also feeds into this, like, I don't know what they call it, but like, you know, getting your body back. Like it's the baby, it's like your post baby body. That's what it is. It's like, you know, you always see it in these like trash magazines where it's like, look, she gave birth like 2 months ago and she already has her abs back. And like, we feed into this, like, we don't honor what happened. It's like, we just want to forget about it as quickly as possible. Like we, you know, I know you, you are a Canadian. I am also in Canada. But you know, a lot of Americans listen to this podcast. Actually, most of, you know, my audience is mostly our cousins, to the South, and they go back to work after 4 to 6. It's like, it didn't happen. You know, it's just like pop the baby out and back to work as per normal.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I don't want to kind of, you know, I talk a lot about the patriarchy. I talk about that on the podcast. But I think that this is part of it. I think that I really do. You are, as a woman, you are gifted and blessed with this ability to create life. And you do that by pushing this baby through your pelvis.
Yep.
And for you not to honor that, if you had a shoulder issue and you came to me, you know, there would be a whole thing. Like there'd be a whole, like, let's work on passive range of motion and then we'll get to active range of motion. And then we'll get to load bearing activity. You know, I'm talking about this in like a rehabilitative sense. And let's make sure your proprioception is there. And let's make sure all of these different things going into the joint. And this is a multi-joint, you know, it is the base of our bodies, it, you know, and for you to just be like, yeah, I'm just going to run that marathon again. I'm going to, you know, I think that that is such a disservice to the female form.
I couldn't agree more. And I look at, you know, in pregnancy, that the belly is revered and people are posting images every day and comparing it to the size of fruits and vegetables, we're so proud of it. And as soon as we've given birth, it becomes a place of shame and we have to hide it away and we have to look not pregnant as fast as possible.
Correct.
And I believe that's contributing again to the breakdown of the body. It's like, we need to rest, we need to recover and rehab. It really, truly requires rehab. Like any other part of the body that became injured, we would go through a rehab, and it is simply overlooked with pregnancy and birth. And I don't, there's also debate within the fitness realm, some physiotherapists as well, about how quickly we start to load. And there are some people saying, well, maybe we need to load sooner. And I disagree. I think we need to have that gradual return, and we are very strong. We are capable. We are very resilient. We have the capacity to do a lot of things, but for the people who aren't given that information, aren't taken through that gradual progression and go back too quickly too soon, I believe, I don't understand the purpose behind it. We can gradually load, and we have seen the benefits of that through years of rehab in all different, in chiro, in physio. And if we take those principles and honor them, then I feel like it would serve us so much better.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, or if you can talk a little bit about how the pelvic floor changes. So you mentioned in the context of pregnancy, we can all, you know, understand that there are hormonal changes, obviously wildly fluctuating hormonal changes, you know, pre, during, and post pregnancy. As a woman is in perimenopause, let's say she has her, you know, maybe she has one or two children, and then into menopause, how do some of the hormonal changes there speak to or influence the integrity of the pelvic floor? Mm-hmm.
So during perimenopause, which is, you know, people will say it's usually the 6 to 10 years prior to menopause, and menopause being one day, that one day marks 12 months, consecutive months without a period. So you have menopause is one day, anything prior is peri, anything after is post. And the perimenopausal years can be, there's a lot of stuff happening and a lot of hormone imbalance, there's thyroid stuff. There's a whole bunch of things that can influence the person, stress levels, sleep levels, hormone levels, all sorts of things. And with regards to the pelvic floor, that person may have been experiencing some symptoms. So even people who have never been pregnant, never given birth, they can experience things like incontinence. And sometimes that can be posture related. Sometimes it can be hormone related. And in perimenopause, it may start to show up. And then once we get closer to menopause, then in perimenopause, our hormones are fluctuating quite dramatically. And once we reach menopause, then essentially our estrogen has been depleting and then essentially stopped. So we are no longer producing estrogen. And within our pelvis, the walls of the vagina with the tissues around our bladder, like within our pelvis, we have a lot of estrogenic tissue that loves estrogen. And when we no longer produce it, then those tissues become less supple. They may become a bit more dry, brittle. Vaginal atrophy is a term that's used. Vaginal dryness starts to show up. And it will pretty much happen to every single person. Vaginal dryness is, I'm not going to say everybody, but pretty much everybody. Like there are going to be a few people here and there, but generally most people will experience dryness, and it's one of the symptoms that does not improve. So hot flashes may show up, but then they gradually, for most people, will start to disappear. But vaginal dryness does not typically improve. So that's one. Dryness is a big one. And also with the fluctuating levels of estrogen, even prior to, so within perimenopause, we may start to, a lot of people will comment how the week before their period or the week of their period, they will notice that they're more symptomatic. So maybe they're prolapsed, they feel it more, or maybe they leak a little bit more. And that's very closely tied to what's happening with the decline in estrogen again. And it's directly influencing.
Like a mini menopause, those 3 or 4 days,
exactly.
Right? It's like a mini menopause. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good kind of window into what's going to happen in the future. And then hopefully it motivates and gets people to take some action. And it's never too late. So there's people I work with who are postmenopause 15, 20 years who can make change. It's never too late. But if we can get this, if we can be aware and be addressing it along the way, then we won't need to experience dryness and atrophy and incontinence and all these things that can really interfere with our quality of life. So those are the most common. And then people who are potentially wearing pads because they have incontinence and because they're accepting it as, well, that's just the way that it is, because that's what media tells me, or that's what my doctors told me, then pads contribute to dryness as well. And so it becomes this vicious cycle that they're wearing pads to address the incontinence. It's not really addressing the incontinence, it's masking it, but that can also contribute to the dryness. And so again, people are just accepting that, well, I'm in menopause now and this is just the way that it is, but there is so much that can be done to overcome dryness and atrophy and get back to enjoying sex again, to not having clothes irritate us, to be able to move with more freedom. And so I hope anybody who's listening to this really has some hope brought back, because so many people are hopeless. They think that sex sucks. I can't have it anymore. My relationships are breaking down. I can't exercise this way anymore because I think it might make it worse, or because I leak all the time. And that's no way. Like we have to move away from that. And there's absolutely hope, and there's so much that can be done.
Another thing I vehemently oppose is bad sex. And of course, if you can, and I don't mean that in a rude, or I mean it from a place of love. You know, as a woman, if you are experiencing poor lubrication, you know, pain, you know, the penetrative sex is painful, and you know that you're in kind of that drop zone between the 40 to, you know, 53-ish, you know, age range, then you know, there's absolutely, for you to understand what's happening and then to also understand that there are things that you can be doing to help with the integrity of the pelvic floor. And, you know, as you were saying, like just to kind of reinforce this idea of, you know, right before, you know, the period when we see this big drop, well, of course we know that, you know, the other thing that I've had women sort of confide to me is that the other time, if there is some sort of prolapse, is right before ovulation, where we see estrogen actually gets really high right before ovulation. And that's because estrogen makes our ligaments lax. It makes our ligaments loosey-goosey. So, and when we think about many of our organs in our pelvis are suspended in the abdominal cavity via ligamentous attachments. Yeah. So if you are... And this is all the more reason for my perimenopausal women to get their hormones under control, particularly those who run a bit more estrogen dominant relative to progesterone, because that is going to make your ligaments everywhere. You know, I talk about it a lot in the context of like resistance training. This is when you should do HIIT. This is when you should not do HIIT. This is when you should lift heavy. This is when you should not lift heavy. But it also applies here at in the pelvic floor as well, because your bladder is going to be a little bit more loosey-goosey because those ligaments are loosey-goosey. Uterus, same thing.
I love how you talk about, and Dr. Stacey Sims talks about as well, cycling with our cycle. That's something that I've always said, is we go through these hormone fluctuations. So let's tailor our training so that we're honoring that cycle and the hormone fluctuations. And for people who are proactive minded, hyaluronic acid is a great, it's a great vaginal moisturizer. So just like we put all this hyaluronic acid in our serum, skin serums on our face, we can do the same thing with our pelvic floor. And that can help. Hyaluronic acid retains moisture. So it helps retain moisture, but it also helps heal any already dry, irritated tissue. There's a great, this, I'm not financially tied to this, but, moisturizeyourvagina.com has a great, very clean product that's hyaluronic acid and vitamin E that has transformed people's lives from a sex, but also just a daily comfort perspective. So I recommend people start that before they have a problem, but it's also something they can start if they already do have a problem. And also vaginal estrogen is something else that I think can be very, very helpful for people. And sometimes even the postpartum population can benefit from that when they have the declining estrogen levels as well.
Absolutely. Did you say moisturizeyourvagina.com? Is that what it was?
Moisturizeyourvagina.com. Yeah.
All right. We'll get that in the show notes. And what a great name. What a great handle. And speaking of handles, I usually start off the podcast really understanding how the person's, you know, body of work really came to be. And I was just so excited to talk about the pelvic floor. We just kind of dove in. But you are the vagina coach, right? Yeah. Like that is the handle. That is your life's work. So I would love, first, do we all need a vagina coach? Like we all have like mindset coaches. We have, you know, financial advisors, you know, is it your opinion that we all need a vagina coach? And I would just love to know how that title came to be, because it's so, it's wonderful.
Yes. I think every vagina will benefit from a coach. And how it came about was, so how I got into the world of pelvic health was through my own fear, fascination with childbirth. And there was a biofeedback device made out of Germany called the Epino, which was designed to help prepare the perineum and the pelvic floor for birth. So I used this product, had a great experience, and I my friends weren't having as great of an experience. And I contacted the company and I said, could I be a distributor for this and sell it on the side? That was my intention. So that's how it started. Gave birth to my second, started a website, started to get a few more different pelvic health products, learned about pelvic floor physio. So I hadn't until like a couple of years after my second was born, learned about pelvic floor physio, learned what they did, started screaming from the rooftops that every single person who has given birth should be seeing a pelvic floor physiotherapist and as part of their postpartum recovery. And then I formed a second business called Bellies Inc. And we were looking at optimizing postpartum recovery, and we manufactured a wrap and coupled that with restorative exercise that was pelvic floor initiated. And so I was working very much in the birth world for a while. So it became kind of my full-time thing in 2009. Pregnant women, new moms was the majority of who I was working with. And then as I was going through the different life stages, going into perimenopause, and people were coming to me saying, well, you know, I gave birth 15 years ago. Can you help me? And the principles were the same. And I said, the conversation needs to happen through the life cycle. And at the time with pregnant women, I was known as the fitness doula. That was my handle. And it didn't really resonate with people in perimenopause and menopause. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, how can I change this? What can it be? So it was in my mind. And then I was speaking to, there's an organization in Toronto called the Mompreneur Organization, and they have a national conference. And I was one of the speakers. My talk was how optimizing your pelvic health can make you a better mompreneur. I get up on stage, and up to that point, you know, as you were mentioning, there's financial coaches, there's marketing, you know, people have coaches for all types of things within their business. And I got up on stage and I just sort of joked. I said, well, now you have a vagina coach for your business. And it just kind of came out, and it was like this light bulb moment. And I just said, that is it. It's the word nobody likes to say. It's the part of the body I want people to be focusing on. I want to normalize the conversation. And we have to get over this, you know, vagina, like whispering this word. And so I just said, I put it on my Instagram, and I said, fitness doula, vagina coach. And it read like, everyone's like, hands down, vagina coach. And I just said, all right, that's it. I'm committing, I'm making the move. And that was, I think, about 5 years ago now. And it was awesome. It is awesome. And sometimes people say, like, vagina? Did you say vagina coach? And so people are still a little bit uncertain. Did she go there? Did she say that word? And, it sums it up. And I'm really truly on a mission to make this a word that is not so uncomfortable, and to make sure future generations are given information at an earlier age, and that we are proud and that we rock pelvic health. It's not something we need to be ashamed of. And Kegels are cool. Kegels are a core exercise. And when we are doing them correctly and coordinated with movement, we are powerful and we can have confidence through any stage of our life.
Absolutely. And I, you know, you and I are on a similar mission, because I, you know, wrote about menstrual cycles and talking about how we can understand and empower ourselves through the information that our body is always giving us. And the pelvic floor is absolutely no different. I think that, you know, women have been taught, you know, in at least in the menstrual hormonal realm, we've been taught to fear our fertility, never actually taught how it works. I think the same is true for our pelvic, you know, it's like, we know that the lady's going to tell you, your legs are going to be separated, and someone's going to say, push. That's like the basically what everyone knows about their pelvic floor and nothing else. And I agree with you. I think that it's high time for us to not have shame around our anatomy, for us to know what is a vagina, what is a vulva, you know, the differences between the two. And I think, you know, understanding how the pelvic floor works is such an empowering, you know, piece of information as a woman to help self-regulate. I love it. I love what you're doing. It's great.
Thank you.
All right. So if people want to find out more about you, about your work, I know you have courses. I know you love hypopressives, as I do as well. I was stalking your Instagram handle and I was like, oh, she likes hypopressives just like me. That's so great. I use them almost every day. They're amazing. So tell everybody, you know, courses, if they want to work with you, like how can people find you?
Vaginacoach.com is my website, and basically any of my social media handles are, if you put vagina coach into Google, you'll find me in Instagram and LinkedIn and YouTube, wherever you'd like to go. And, I have two kind of components. So I have courses and programs for people that are pregnant or people who have incontinence and prolapse. There's a 28-day buff muff challenge. There's a 28-day birth like a boss challenge. So whatever phase of life you're in, there's something for you. But then I also have certification courses for fitness and allied health professionals who work with the female population and want to understand how they can, within their scope, not diagnose, but screen for things like incontinence and prolapse, and what sort of exercise can they be providing, and movement and therapies can they provide to help their people move better and move in ways that actually helps rather than hinders their situation. So those are kind of the two components. And I also offer a free discovery call that people can book on my website. It's a 30-minute call with me, because it's, you know, not everybody is familiar yet with what a vagina coach does. And they're also like, okay, this person, I heard them and they're giving me a little bit of hope. What can my next steps be? And people can then come and explore, ask some questions, have a little bit of direction, and then decide whether working in one of my programs is right for them or working one-on-one with me. And a lot of people who learn hypopressives like to work one-on-one with me to kind of fine tune the technique. It's a little bit different than some of the other types of exercise, but it really is so powerful for prolapse and also incontinence. And I reverse the stage 2 prolapse myself with it. And I do it every single day. I love it. And it's a part of pretty much every person that I work with.
And you wrote a book as well.
I've wrote a couple of books. My most recent one, Your Pelvic Floor, launched in March of this year. And I wrote one called Pregnancy Fitness that's published through Human Kinetics. Prepare to Push was my very first book. So that was, again, working with pregnant women and people. And I have another one called The Inside Story, which is more just kind of like a small ebook, but it talks about pelvic health through the life cycles. And all of those are also available on my website.
Amazing. So we will have all of those links in the show notes, Betty's, if you'd like to reach out to Kim. Kim, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I will support you in all the ways that I can to help you get your message out there, one through this podcast with my Betty's that are listening here as well. So thank you so much for your brilliance and for your time. It's been great.
Likewise. I really enjoyed chatting, and thank you so much for helping increase awareness and get the message out.
You are welcome. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation and also wanted to make sure that you knew about the program that we are running this month. It is called Betty Hormones, and we are talking all things hormones. So we just had our first class. It was recorded and you'll be able to access it afterwards. And it was all about cortisol and epinephrine, norepinephrine, the sympathetic system, and the effects that that has on our hormones, our general well-being and our happiness. And of course, strategies that you can employ to help reduce your stress on a day-to-day basis. In the coming weeks, we're going to be talking about sex hormones. So we're going to be talking about balancing our testosterones, our estrogen, which is a really big topic for my perimenopausal women. And we'll also be getting into thyroid health and some of the hormones around metabolism. So touching on cortisol starts to bridge that. And we're also going to be bringing in thyroid hormones and how to optimize for them. We're going to talk a little bit about growth hormone as well and other strategies, whether it's lifestyle behaviors, foods that you can be eating, movements that you can be engaging in, and habits and tricks and strategies for you to be optimizing your hormones every day, all day. And it's not overwhelming that you're not going to be doing every single day, 24 hours a day, optimizing your hormones, but small strategies that really have big, big oomph. And we had such a great call this week, or last week, I should say. The next call is coming up this Wednesday. And if you are in a time zone that does not afford you the ability to join the calls live, they're recorded. You will have lifetime access to them. And it's just something I'm really, really proud of and really want to invite you to join if you feel so inclined to do so. So you can check out the program at hellobetty.club. That's www.hellobetty, hellobetty.club, /Betty Betty, again, Betty dash hormones, Hormones. So you can see the curriculum there, what we're going to be doing, how the program is going to be laid out, and really looking forward to seeing you there. So please join us, and you'll be able to ask your questions to me live. And last week we had so many questions that I wasn't able to get to them all. So what I'm doing is I'm actually creating a bonus episode to be able to answer all these questions. And I'll do that every single week if I need to make sure that all of your questions are answered. So love to see you there. Hope to see you there. And we'll talk very soon. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For those of you who want to continue on this week's Geeky Magic Carpet Ride with me, visit bettershow.co/show notes. You'll find research, links, summary notes, musings that I prepared in preparation for the podcast, and I often throw in some of my best practices, bonuses, and links. All the juicy bits are in there for you.